Welcome back to the Big Wake Up Call. I'm Ryan Gatenby, and time for my next guest, who is a number one New York Times best-selling author. The brand new book is called Everything I Learned About Racism I Learned in School. We are going to visit with Tiffany Jewell. And Tiffany, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you? How are things going where you are?
Okay. The weather's really nice, so I'm not going to complain today.
Now, how is it? And you've done this before, obviously, written other books and bestsellers. Is there the excitement still of going on a book tour, talking about the book, which is out today?
Yes. So this book is the first one I'm really kind of doing an in-person tour with, too, because my first book came out like right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the second one came out at the end of the pandemic. So this is very new and exciting for me. And I also just, this book is very personal. So I'm super excited to have it out in the world.
Yeah. Well, and the book is very insightful. I think it's accessible, not to just young readers. I think everyone could get something out of this book. I like the format. Can you share with us what it's about?
Yeah, it's so it's part memoir, I guess, to tell my schooling journey story. I started school in 1984 in upstate New York and graduated college in 2003. So it's part of just a memoir about schooling, and then it's a history book that includes some insight on magnet schooling and tracking and military recruitment and students' rights in school. And then it also is part anthology. It includes like 16, I think it's 16 other contributors and their stories about schooling from elementary school through college. And then it's just like something else altogether that I am not quite sure, but always aiming to try to do things a little differently. So.
And I love that you have a contribution from Joanna Ho, who is a member of our Three Timers mm-hmm. Club. So right there, you're an insider already. Yes. You're well on your way.
I love Joanna.
She's the best.
And I'm so lucky to have her as a friend.
Now, writing for young readers, but obviously this is for anyone. What goes into trying to make sure you are writing for the mind to reach, you know, a young reader who obviously is going to relate to this book?
Right. I have been an educator for over 20 years at this point.
Okay.
And even though I'm not in the classroom anymore, I still work in schools pretty frequently and have a lot of conversations with young folks from like preschoolers all the way to high schoolers and their educators and their caregivers. So I always look, for me, writing is another way of teaching and just reaching a different and wider audience, because so much of teaching is storytelling. And so I really looked at kind of, this is how I'm writing for young folks. It's like, I get to give them a lesson, even though I'm maybe not in right in front of them, which is exciting.
So growing up, as you said, in the 80s and 90s would be grade school and mm-hmm. high school, I graduated from high school in 1989, the old days, and you know, the subtle racism against my Asian background was unusual. But you know, my grandfather is part of the indigenous people of Siberia, so obviously I never mm-hmm. saw that represented in anything. Was it at all getting better? Did you see yourself at all as we progressed through the 90s?
Not really. And I'm Black biracial. My mom's white. My dad's Black. There were lots of, I saw myself in other students and other kids. Luckily I have a twin sister, so I always had a reflection. But didn't see myself in the curriculum. You know, we only really looked at, studied Black folks during Black History Month sometimes. And it was, you know, the same, like it was always Martin Luther King Jr., maybe Rosa Parks. I had a big obsession with Harriet Tubman in elementary school, but didn't see myself. I didn't read a book that had a character who was like me until I was out of school. So even in college, even, you know, in high school, I didn't read books with characters who were Black or Black biracial. So very rarely did I see myself, which is like really frustrating because like you'd think in the 1980s and 1990s, early 2000s, we would have had some of it together,
right.
But we didn't.
Yeah, I guess. And my background wasn't the right kind of Asian because that's not who you wrote
right.
about when you combine Asian with indigenous. And like, that's too weird for people to wrap their heads around when I was a kid. And I did get from a parent like, so Ryan, what are you? Like, well, how do you answer that question
right.
when you're eight?
I know. Like, and you shouldn't have to, which is Randy Rebai wrote a beautiful piece in the book, like, people ask, like, you know, what are you? Where are you from? Because kids like us who are like not so easily recognizable, like we get that all the time.
I wonder if it's better in schools than just, I'll tell you, my wife works for Getty Images in Rights and Clearance. So she gets a lot of mm-hmm. requests during Black History Month mm-hmm. and 99% of them are for Martin Luther King, who of course should be
right.
she recognized and respected, but it's just that seems to be focused on him and requests
right.
for images of other prominent, important, you know, Black historical
right.
figures are not even considered. It's like, okay, we found Martin Luther
right.
King. That applies to all audiences, but we don't want to dig too deep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating, that like statistic. And I think I'm like grateful my children go to a school where they're learning about Bayard Rustin and Coretta Scott King and Fannie Lou Hamer and other incredible activists and Black folks, and also looking at like people now in our own community, because like it's Black history, but it's also Black futures. Like we're making history every day.
Right.
But yeah, it's frustrating that we... And it's also, you know, when we look at, often in schools, when we look at Martin Luther King, we don't look at his radical side. We don't look at the Poor People's Campaign. We rarely do children know, like, why he went to jail, why he got arrested.
Right.
You know, so I would love to see the curriculum shift and change to allow more of the truth to come out, too.
Yeah, and, you know, I just... recall anything else. I mean, obviously my school was probably 95% white. There was one, I mean, I was a biracial kid. My friend next door was biracial, but I don't remember, maybe 99% we read about historical white people. And I do remember a couple of paragraphs
yeah.
about, you know, people that were not.
Right. A couple paragraphs, even though like it's the global majority. You're like, okay.
And you just wonder how inherent that was, that it was just accepted or a majority of people didn't even think about it. Well, that's just what it was. That's what you teach. But there's obviously a large number of kids that are going to be left out. And it's hard when you don't see mm-hmm. yourself, not just in history, but you didn't yet see yourself, you know, represented in fiction or nonfiction or any of the arts that you talked about.
Yeah. You know, like it's not okay. Like when you think about like who's not represented, and we see it in what's happening now is schools and districts in different places are taking away ethnic studies. They're banning books. Like there's still that like drive to silence the truth.
It's disturbing even seeing it in mm-hmm. it's supposedly some liberal areas, but it's like, I don't know. A, have you even read the books that you're trying to get banned? Or is it just the idea
right.
that you're being taught something that maybe you weren't taught? And it's harder for some parents like, well, why are they learning about this? We didn't learn about this. That must not be necessary.
Right. And it's often about power. Like, you know, if I can control what my children are learning, then I still have the power over them, or I have power to make the big decisions. And it's really frustrating.
Yeah. At a certain point, I don't know. I tend to trust educators, but then when I was a kid, you know, I mean, my teachers were wonderful people. I don't think they did anything mm-hmm. deliberately. They were just doing what they knew with the access they had. And fortunately, I'm seeing with my daughter's school being far more progressive. Of course, we're in a liberal bubble here in the Chicago area, but I'm hoping that that's with this generation of kids that are certainly more open, that we're trending in a better direction.
Yeah, what I know about educators, and I have the like ability to meet and work with so many, is they're incredible.
Yeah.
Especially for like what they're doing with the like the little amount of money that schools are given and the amount of like pressure, and like especially like since the pandemic, everything's gotten harder. The educators are incredible, but it's the like school system, like the folks with power, the school boards, right. The way cities don't allocate enough money to schooling, the way the federal government like keeps putting pressure on schooling without doing anything to like help schools. You know, or I think of like how like cities will just take over school districts because they're supposedly unquote, you know, quote unquote failing, even though like to whose standards.
Right.
And it, you know, like teachers are still like doing things where every day and teaching our kids and making them feel safe and cared for, hopefully and ideally in most situations, which is amazing. And schooling isn't working in our country. Like we could do so much better.
Well, thank you for writing this book and sharing your stories. And I appreciate the work you're doing with anti-bias and anti-racist education. Thank you for that. The new book is available now wherever books are sold. It's Everything I Learned About Racism I Learned in School. We've been visiting with the author, Tiffany Jewell. And thank you so much for being on the show today. Please come back anytime.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Ryan.